and ask Congresswoman Hooley and Speaker Merkley to come up. And of course, before we start, people have been asking me all day about Congresswoman Hooley being here, and they want to say hi, and everybody want to express their thanks for your many years of public service. And probably not too many people in the room know, when I used to be with the police force and I'd come back and lobby on national police issues, your office was always very helpful. You were always very helpful, and your staff was, and I appreciate your many years of public service. And
she's still helpful, and your staff is still helpful. Thank
you.
You
have to remember I'm going to be there till January.
And we're so glad.
And there are things that I want to get done in that period of time.
Well, great. And Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, I want to just thank the Congresswoman for her tireless effort on the behalf of Oregonians. But when I have a 14-year-old daughter that everybody knows about, and when I talk about strong women, I can easily point to you and your entire career and your lifetime in dedicated service community. So I just wanted to thank you for that. I'm going to listen to your comments and then I got to leave, but okay. I do want to definitely sit here and listen.
I'll hurry through my comments.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm not in a hurry, Congressman.
Representative Boquist.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. I like to express sincere appreciation for the service to my district because you are my Congresswoman. And despite our differences at times, I mean, your office and its constituent services in support of both myself, my House district, and the citizens in our district has been exemplary.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, please. Go ahead, please.
Are you ready?
I am. We are.
Okay. First, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for having me here today to talk about how we can best meet the needs of our veterans. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this issue because it's very near and dear to my heart. As I know it is for all of you, that's why you're on this committee. We have 3,500 Oregon Guard soldiers set to deploy to Afghanistan next year, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that these soldiers and their families are prepared for deployment, that our soldiers have all the equipment they need, family support networks, and reintegration services when they come home. My goal is to not lose any more soldiers once they are home because of lack of health care, opportunities for education, for health care, and housing. And I know with the help of everyone in this room, Oregon is going to do its best to make this happen. I'm proud that Oregon has been the leader in reintegration issues, setting a model for other states to follow. In fact, Oregon and Minnesota are the really two states that everyone looks to. The Oregon National Guard reintegration team is a vital resource for soldiers and their family as these men and women return home from overseas and transition back into our communities, helping them with everything from mental health counseling to education to employment services. The soldiers that are working on reintegration team are committed to doing whatever it takes to help their fellow soldiers 24/7. They've personally intervened in 15 suicide attempts. That's 15 soldiers who are here today because of the commitment of this reintegration team. And that's why I'm committed to getting these men and women whatever they need to continue this vital work. But they are not the only Oregon veterans in need. As we talk about how best to help the soldiers who are coming home today, we also need to remember our older veterans, those who fought in Vietnam, Korea, World War II, and other conflicts, who we promised to take care of when they returned home from battle. We promised them health care for life, and yet too many veterans have had to wait months before they can get the care they need at the VA. Now, I think our VA hospital does a fabulous job, but it is still a long wait. We promised we'd take care of them if they were wounded, and yet it's currently taking an average of 18 to 24 months for the VA to process an appeal for benefits. The Afghanistan and Iraq wars have put additional stresses on benefits and health care and our health care system that is currently underfunded, understaffed, and spread far too thin. In many ways, a budget is a reflection of our national priorities. Over the last 7 years, we've been ratcheting up military activities and spending, yet the VA health care budget hasn't kept up with the pace of inflation, with the cost of health care, let alone with the number of new and aging veterans. But taking care of our veterans when they return home from war must be considered the cost of war. Last year, at the start of the new Congress, we provided an additional $5.2 billion in health care funding for 2007. As a member of the Budget Committee, I'm proud that we passed the 2008 budget that increases funding for veteran services by 18%. Last year alone, Congress made the largest investment in veterans health care in 77 years. But it's only the beginning. Too many years of neglect cannot be erased with one, two, or even three major investments. We must continue to keep our commitment to our soldiers. As you know, the President released his 2009 budget last week, requesting $41.2 billion for VA medical care, an increase of $2.3 billion over the 2008 budget. But in light of the expected 14% in the number of OIF and OEF veterans using the VA and the continued cost of medical inflation, that is not enough to maintain services at their current level. We must do better for our veterans, and I will be fighting through the Budget Committee and the appropriation process to make sure the VA has the money they need to provide quality health care for all of our veterans. In addition to the budget, Congress made progress on several important veterans issues last year. One of my top priorities has been to ensure that the National Guard and Reserve members receive the same treatment as their active duty counterparts when they are serving our country in the same capacity. After 5 years of mobilization, our National Guard members are still trying to navigate a system that was intended for use by the active duty rather than our current nearly equal blend of reserve and active components. Last year, I passed a provision that would let National Guard and Reserve soldiers returning from combat have medical care at the military facility closest to their home. Now, you think about it. When an active duty soldier goes in, they come back to the base where they were deployed from. Their family, their buddies, their friends, and their medical care is there. When you're a Guard or Reserve, you were stuck at the base from where you were deployed, so that may be thousands of miles away from home. So at least we said, let's make sure they have the medical care closest base to their home so they have time for family and friends to visit them. Another major priority and issue that affects all soldiers is the prevention and treatment of traumatic brain injuries, which are referred to as the signature wound of this war. We have the technology for helmet pads that can drastically reduce the damage done to the brain by explosion and other impacts. We just need to get it into the helmets of every single soldier. After several years of working on this issue, you would think it would be a very simple thing to do. We finally made significant progress last year. We had included in the authorization bill that, in fact, if families or members bought the helmets, they could get reimbursed for them. But I will tell you, I don't know why in the heck we're asking them to pay for them themselves when they know they work better than what we currently have. We've also passed legislation to extend the period of eligibility for health care for veterans from 2 to 5 years after their discharge or release. One of the concerns I've heard over and over again is that many of our veterans coming home from overseas are either unwilling to seek health care or unaware that they even have a problem, particularly in the case of PTSD. By giving these men and women a 5-year window to seek care without having to worry about eligibility requirements and VA claims, they'll be able to receive the highly specialized care the VA is known for. But there's still a lot of work to be done. My top priority for this year is to help returning soldiers transition back to their communities by giving them 15 days of paid reintegration time when they return from active duty. Now, frankly, I would prefer 90 days, but looking at the budget, we think we can get 15 days. We need to minimize the toll this war is having on the brave men and women defending our country. Providing more time for reintegration will give returning Guard and Reserve soldiers a buffer between their time on active duty and being thrust back into civilian life. All of the issues that we talk about, from education to mental health screenings, would be helped if we gave these men and women time to decompress when they come home from overseas. Congress passed legislation to create a National Combat Veteran Reintegration Program, administered by the Chief of the National Guard Bureau with the Secretary of Defense. So we made progress. This program would provide members of the National Guard and Reserves and their families sufficient information, services, referral, and proactive outreach opportunities throughout the entire deployment cycle. Oregon already has many of these services in place, but this new law would also help fund 270 staff positions, which should mean that Oregon will get several funded positions to manage the state's program, taking some of the burden off the Oregon National Guard's budget. But the administration hasn't provided any funding for this program or any other reintegration efforts. In fact, in his 2009 budget, the president requested money for the reintegration of Iraqi soldiers, but none for our own servicemen and women. I think this is an injustice that has to be fixed. That's why I'm going to continue to fight to fund reintegration time for our troops until every returning Guard and Reserve member is paid for a full 15 days when they get home from active duty. This is an issue that Congress needs to address, but there's certainly a role for the state to play as well. One of the reasons that Oregon's reintegration efforts have been so successful is because the sheer number of agencies and organizations that have come together to help our returning soldiers. We do something that no other state does. From state and local governments to private businesses, nonprofits, and the legislature has played a vital role in providing funding for the reintegration issues and for veterans programs. So thank you very much. Thank you for the short-term loans that you made. It's really made a difference. But this burden really needs to come off the state's back. It really needs to be part of the federal budget where it belongs. But I need every member's help on this committee to show the Department of Defense and the administration that Oregonians care about our troops and demonstrate the importance of the reintegration efforts. That's why I'm here today to ask you to pass a memorial calling on the Secretary of the Army to fund the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program Act to show how widespread the support is for this program. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, from funding for VA health care to expanding our reintegration efforts. But our veterans have done everything we've asked them to do for our country, and we must keep our commitment to them now so that when they are home, so to help them when they're home and in our communities. Working together, we can keep our promise to our soldiers and continue to set Oregon as a model for veterans programs in this country. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you, and more importantly, thank you for all the work that you do for Oregon soldiers. Thanks.
Thank you, we're past the time without suspension rules to introduce a new memorial, but I'll see if I can't talk the speaker into doing that here.
Okay.
That's true. So. And I'd just like to ask you, at the Eastern Oregon Training Center, which now handles pretty much elderly ability to disabled people. And that's kind of fading out, but we have a good facility over by Pendleton. And would that be something we might look to have a state-federal partnership so we could bring some of these people with the closed-head trauma, the brain injury trauma, back? Because we don't have facilities in Oregon for those people, and that would be a good place. And they could handle other trauma as well over there. But I don't know if we could somehow get a state-federal partnership to service our men and women.
And again, I don't know if that's the best place, but you know what? It may be a great facility for it. I just don't know that at this time, Representative. But it would be something I would be very interested in looking at. Again, you know, you got to take some time to get these guys back into civilian life. And it takes time. They've got to get reacquainted with their families. They've got to find a job. They need to know what their educational opportunities are. And I just think in this whole traumatic brain injury, I don't think we have any clue of what the costs are going to be to that, both in terms of the soldiers' lives and their families' lives, but also in costs to the state and to the country.
I saw a program on TV the other night where they had a young soldier who had been knocked out by a blast, and they were talking to him. Was that his first one? It was his fifth time that it happened to him over in Iraq. So was getting more and more damage each time. And so I agree that we're going to see a huge amount of that come home. those injuries that aren't, you can't see them, they're not visible, but they will show up in the change in personalities. I've seen people in not just in that line of work, but other work where they get some kind of traumatic injury, and you have a personality shift, and then the marriage is down the drain, and then all those problems we see so often compound. And I really appreciate all the work you've done for our veterans, and especially we need to have the National Guard needs to have the same GI Bill as the active duty, since anymore the National Guard and Reserves are our active duty, and we need to treat them a little better.
Well, they're serving the same capacity.
Yeah,
working side by side.
We need to treat them a little better, and as you know, we're trying to do that in the state. So. Yes.
Well, I just wanted to let Congresswoman Hooley know how much I appreciate all she's done, and let you know there's a program, another plug for something we heard early on in this process, and it's through the community colleges, and they're kind of like resource centers for veterans, and they've got a couple of them up and running now, Lane Community, and what's the other one?
Clackamas.
So you know all of that.
I do.
Okay. Anyway, that's a it's a start there to a new.
I will tell you something, that the community effort and all of the organizations, whether it's community colleges, whether it's counties with their mental health program, I mean, people really have come together on this issue, and we really have set the example for the rest of the United States. We still have a long ways to go.
You know, thank you for all you're doing.
But we have a long ways to go.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to come see us today.
And again, thank you. I mean, I know that it wasn't a Veterans Committee when I was here, and I think just the fact that you have a Veterans Committee shows the commitment this state has to our veterans and our Reserve and Guard. So thank you for having the committee, and thank you for serving on it.
Thank you. Speaker Merkley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Speaker Merkley and I wanted to say what an honor it is to share this panel with you and to appear here to endorse Representative Cooley's proposal that we have a memorial for the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Act. It is appropriate under our rules for a committee to request a memorial or a resolution, and so I'm here to join in that request that the committee asked for that, so that we could have that drafted and either sent back to this committee or if with a suspension of the rules, or sent to the Rules Committee, which will still be open for House bills and after tomorrow. Time is quickly running out for us. And indeed, part of the reason I wanted to come and speak with you all is because I've seen several articles recently that deeply disturbed me about the treatment of our returning veterans. And Congresswoman Hooley has shined the light on a host of those issues. But let me mention three of those issues. And really, the timing that we're at right now, this is a year from the time that we became aware of the scandal at Walter Reed, in which our veterans were being taken care of in health circumstances that were completely, totally unacceptable. But there is a great deal of distance that we have to travel. And I was very disturbed recently to read that the administration has been arguing that there is not a responsibility to provide for the mental health of veterans. And indeed, the statistics that were presented were that 120 veterans per week are committing suicide. Now, I've not been able to independently verify that number, but I ask you to just kind of pause and think about that number for a moment. Let's assume that it's correct. 120 veterans per week. That would be a veteran every 90 minutes. That would mean more veterans are dying from mental stress upon return to the United States than are dying overseas in the conflict in Iraq at a faster pace. And so it shows how very, very significant mental health care is. And we need to indeed have increased funding for mental health services for our returning vets. We need to make sure that we have proper screening and treatment for traumatic brain injury, or TBI. And the estimate is now that about 300,000 veterans may return home suffering from it. And we need to make sure that we have a fully funded VA health care system. We have also noticed another alarming trend related to reintegration, and that is that employers are reluctant to hire returning vets for jobs. And the Associated Press reported, noted that the inadequate job networks and the lack of mentors after extended periods of war are contributing to the problem, and that employers often have misplaced stereotypes about veterans' fitness for employment, such as concerns they did not possess adequate technological skills, or were too rigid, lacked education, or were too much at risk. So we absolutely have to continue the work that has begun well here in Oregon, but push hard to provide a job foundation, which is one of the most important aspects of helping veterans reintegrate. And a third article I saw recently that concerned me was in regard to Army officials intervening to ask representatives on a base to stop assisting injured soldiers with their military disability paperwork, in part because it drives up costs. And, of course, I think we all understand that we have an obligation to assist our veterans with paperwork, and if they indeed qualify for disability, to assist them in obtaining disability. So those are just three recent incidents that accentuate the importance of the effort that Congresswoman Hooley is putting forward, and I would encourage this committee to make a request so that we could get a resolution underway, even at this moment, which it seems like we just started session, and we did last week. But here we are, the last day for House committees to examine House bills is tomorrow, and to move them out. So we're going to work with you and hopefully work with this committee to assist and facilitate the request.
Great. Thank you. Super. That would be fabulous.
Thank you. And this isn't just the United States. I was in China in November, and in the English newspaper, I was reading an article from veterans of the American War against Korea that we helped, is the way the Chinese described the Korean War. And there was Chinese veterans of the Korean War who were saying, we're not getting the health care we were promised, we're not getting the education we were promised. And I was laughing, not sort of laughing, thinking that we could have said, you know, our veterans could be saying the same things. So it's kind of a universal problem, but we really do need to get on top of it. So thank you again.
Mr. Chair, are we looking for a motion?
We'll do a motion real quick so you can get out of here. If no further questions, the panel is certainly dismissed. You don't have to.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, we could keep them here all night, I'm sure, now that we got them here.
Thank you again.
I could talk about this
someday. Well, thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I move that the committee request the speaker to obtain a bill draft from the Honorable Speaker, forgive me, a bill draft from Legislative Council that outlines the Congresswoman's request.
Okay.
That's sufficient?
That's sufficient. Okay, any discussion at all? No discussion? I don't think we need to vote on that or no? Okay, we do. Okay. Roll call, please.
Thank you.
I'll
wait until you take the roll call, but thank you.
Yeah, you got to count votes. You never know. Here, who's gonna...
Not on this committee.
Aye.
This is about as bipartisan as it gets.
It is.
Aye.
Aye.
See, he's excused. He's had another.
He would have said aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Okay. Let him vote.
Yeah. Thank you.
Motion carries.
We have a couple more people are here to speak, and Administrator Taylor had to leave the room for a minute. He's going to get a picture with his daughter and a congresswoman. His daughter just got appointed to Annapolis, and will be starting in June, and so they're going to get a picture of that. Mr. Carter and Mr. O'Reilly.
As you can tell, who's got the most to do.
Yeah.
Bam.
Yeah, why don't you go get them out of there?
I tightened it anyway.
Just wait a second, we'll see what we get. She'll be. Would you could ask Berkeley to move them out of the room so we can hear.
Yeah.
Just a second, please. We'll get them. Get a little. Can you ask them to move out?
I guess so. Never mind. Never mind. He'll do it. He'll do it, Gene.
Okay. Mr. Carter, please.
I'm Wes Carter. Let me thank you for talking today, and I'll try to bring it down to a couple minutes instead of what I had first thought. I wanted to ask for help on a bunch of specific issues, but also first comment on something that happened last year during the veterans demonstration. There was comment about veterans having their hands out, and that made me kind of sad because I assure you our hand was up before it went out, and I didn't like that phrasing by the state employee that made it. When you called us to military service, we accepted the job to go where others didn't want to go and to do what others couldn't do. We now find ourselves paying the price that others wouldn't pay, and we're paying it in the currency of blood and bone as well as dollars and cents. We're also paying a disproportionate price as we address our property taxes and our kids' college education. We need property tax relief. It was a program designed years ago to help exempt most of a veteran's property tax obligation, and the present $19,000 of exemption from valuation is inadequate against the average value of a home in Oregon. It doesn't cover it. Last year, for instance, Yamhill increased my valuation by almost twice that amount of money. Again, they had done it the previous year as well. A totally disabled war veteran, and there's only of the 325,000 veterans in Oregon, only 3,000 of them are totally disabled, and only 2,400 of them are totally disabled war veterans. A totally disabled war veteran deserves to keep his home or farm and not bear the burden of the county seizing several months of a very modest pension just to cover the property taxes. We average only 10 to 15 totally disabled war veterans per county in the state of Oregon. It's not a terrible burden that we're asking them to pick up. And second issue, college education for our kids. Our younger disabled war veterans and war widows need college for our kids. I stared at the ceiling of a room at Bethesda Naval Hospital for a long time, and I was mostly worried about my own boo-boos, but then I quickly became aware of my financial problems. With my four kids, it was the biggest worry I had. Meeting my family's needs until the VA paperwork was approved 3 years later, and I started getting some money. Meeting my family's needs consumed our home and most of my IRAs while you folks got your VA together to start sending me a check. It was a painful time. Our kids expected to go to college. They'd earned the right with good grades. They'd wanted to go to the same quality of school their two parents went to. And while the VA does help with some assistance for disabled veterans, college-bound kids, it's not enough to meet expenses. We need a plan for the children of Oregon's totally disabled war veterans and children of deceased military members to go to school. Our kids shouldn't have to pay the price of daddy or mommy raising their hand to enlist by reducing their expectations of college. Our kids deserve a chance at the education, the same chance enjoyed by their classmates whose parents opted not to go to war. If Oregon can't afford it, please think that with the VA pension equaling about 65% of the average Oregonian household income, we can't either. Individual veterans can't afford it. And when I ask you to think about helping college-bound kids, if we look at the 2,400 totally disabled war veterans, only about 300 of them are in the age group where we would be thinking their kids might want to go to school. So even if all of them went to school, it's a small population, but the burden for each of those 300 moms or dads who want to send their kids to school is overwhelming. On the third issue I'd like to ask your help on someday, our National Guardsmen and Reservists pay for civilian health insurance. We pay that. I continued paying it while I was deployed for the Persian Gulf War. When I got home and left Bethesda Naval Hospital and lined up to have my paperwork considered by the VA, as they told me I wasn't a veteran yet, that would take a few years of application. I turned to my Blue Cross health insurer because I've been paying for health insurance, only to hear that they had a war clause. that they had a clause that denied me the care for the injuries because I was overseas. I ask you to consider that that's against the public interest. If a guardsman or a reservist pays for health insurance, that health insurance should continue to cover issues like war injuries. I don't know how that would work given calamities, a war time situation in the United States or whatever, but something's got to be done there to be paying for Blue Cross and then to get home and find out that you're denied the care because, by the way, we've got this war clause. It was a terrible surprise. From the beginning, veterans' benefits were designed to meet Lincoln's promise in his second inaugural, to care for him who has borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan. I ask that you work towards a situation where a young man or woman can enlist today if the country calls, knowing that if there is wartime injury or death, the state remains committed to providing the kind of life enjoyed by the kids next door whose dad decided not to bother enlisting. The pain and disability from our wounds are the currency that we use to pay our property taxes and put our kids through school as we burn off the VA pension. And we need some help on those things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, John?
My name is Kevin O'Reilly, and I'm a disabled veteran. I'm physically disabled. I'm a spinal cord injured veteran. I also, and I really struggled with how to express this for the record, I have mental health issues, is the nice way of putting it. And I know today we spoke a little bit, Darlene Hooley spoke a little bit about it, and I wanted to sort of get behind that, what she was talking about. Mental health, some of the issues that come along with some of what these guys are experiencing can be every bit as debilitating as a physical disability. It can be just as difficult to get a job and hold a job and have what might be considered a normal life. I was about 10 years before it dawned on me, and I remember the day it happened, that I might have some issues I need to deal with. And it was about another 10 years before I got around to dealing with them. When we start looking at how we might help these veterans who have mental health issues out, we need to sort of look at it in the long term, 10 years and 20 years down the road before they actually come in and start asking for the help that they probably need. Like most guys, I'm a guy, I can fix anything. And at the end of the day, well, I needed a little bit of help getting this one under control, and I got it. And I got it because veterans were there to help me through it, not because the VA so much. The VA does a lot. God bless them. They try hard. They have vet centers, which really help. Unfortunately, it's not enough, and it's not everywhere. Maybe next session, some ideas might come up how we can help these guys out. I'd like you to consider those when it happens, if it happens. And that's all I wanted to say. If there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to field them.
Thank you. And the VA, my father was a World War I veteran, and he was in aviation, which was the early days, when he still had wooden propellers. And the wooden propeller came apart, hit a building, hit him, and knocked out his front teeth. And years later, he had problems. He went to the VA, and they said, well, your records don't show that that happened, you know, World War I and the Portugal and the Azores Islands. And they just denied him, and he was so insulted he wouldn't go back and try to, you know, he didn't bother trying to fight him over it. And I found his records, and there shows periods when he was under medical care, but they said, oh, that's probably the flu. Might have been, I don't know, but he's, of course, long gone. But anyway, I mean, these kind of things, the VA should be there to facilitate for these people coming home, and like you say, it's going to show up later on, not tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you're sure it's sort
of... When I got back from the Persian Gulf War, I flew a medevac, and I asked at the Asheville VA Medical Center in Asheville, North Carolina, about PTSD, and I was invited to a picnic that they'd arranged with the guys from the Navy CB Battalion. That was the extent of it. Hmm. So it's better now, but the problems, as he said, are still years ahead.
I'm a retired Portland police. Most of my career is in Portland. And we had a thing where when I first started working, somebody involved in a shooting would usually last another 4 or 5 years and they'd be gone. They just, their career would go down. And now they require everybody involved has to go see a psychiatrist or psychologist before they can return to work. When it was optional, nobody would go. now that it's mandatory, they go, they get some early treatment, which is very effective, and they're not having those problems. So that's, yeah, vital. Thank you very much, and thank you
thank
for
you.
Your service.
Thank you.
Mr. Hesseldahl, and we already did this once. Kudzis? Close enough? You know who you are.
Yes.
Want to take your
seat? Actually, mine are sitting behind. I just have some private notes.
Please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, if you would.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Norman L. Hesseldahl, and I reside at 1705 Onyx Street Northwest, in Salem. I'm a Native American resident of Oregon for more than 25 years, and I've lived here in Salem for the past 4 years. I'm a college graduate with more than 35 years of experience in federal and state government. I'm presently semi-retired, operate a management consulting service from my home, and I'm a veteran. I served 3 years, 11 months, and 19 days in the United States Air Force, and I remember every day. I have an honorable discharge as a Staff Sergeant, E5, and my duties included involved the gathering of electronic intelligence, and I carried a top-secret crypto clearance. For the last 2 years of my enlistment, I supervised a 12-person intelligence gathering unit and regularly served as an armed courier, carrying top-secret materials between my unit and our headquarters. I was lucky. It was what we called peacetime then, Cold War. In all the time I served, I never had to draw a weapon and never came under hostile fire. And, of course, that's not the case today. The men and women returning to Oregon today have served in combat, and many of them have indeed come under fire. My purpose today is to suggest to you some things that I think the Oregon State Legislature and various state agencies in Oregon could do to provide timely help and support to those returning veterans. Here are five specific suggestions. One, take over the funding and operation of the Oregon Veterans Home. Ensure that it offers top-flight medical and psychiatric care and that it's available to every veteran, regardless of their ability to pay. We know that many veterans of the Middle East conflict have been denied appropriate care for injuries such as DPTS and hearing loss because these wounds are invisible and they're written off by the military as pre-existing conditions. We may not be able to correct that outrage, but we can ensure that the veterans' home is available to all veterans, regardless of income. And did you know that the Oregon State Legislature has never contributed to the financing of the Oregon Veterans Home? Number two, make all Oregon veterans eligible for the Oregon Health Plan. We provide this important health coverage to illegal immigrants and ex-convicts. Shouldn't we dedicate a few of our tax dollars to provide that same support to our honored veterans? Three, concentrate veteran specialists from all state agencies in a single one-stop veteran center in a convenient location, such as the Oregon Veterans Building. This veteran center should operate on a Monday through Saturday schedule, making it available to as many veterans as possible. And please find a way to provide free parking for veterans who come to that facility for help. Number four, require each state agency to add and fill at least two new entry-level permanent full-time positions and earmark those positions for honorably discharged veterans, with preference going to combat veterans. And what's more, those positions should be designed for career development and enhancement so the incumbents could move on into more responsible positions in state government, leaving the entry-level job vacant for another veteran. I actually think larger agencies should be required to add more than two positions, perhaps up to as much as 0.5% of their authorized staffing. That would be five new positions for an agency with 1,000 authorized positions. But in one fell swoop, you will have provided employment, health coverage, and a retirement plan for a significant number of returning veterans on an ongoing basis. And number five, do whatever it takes to see that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has the funding and staffing necessary to make a home loan to every qualifying veteran. As a beneficiary of that program myself, I can testify to its importance to a veteran and their family. My wife and I live in a lovely home in West Salem today, but we would not be there if it had not been for that all-important starter home loan that we got 25 years ago from ODVA here in Oregon. In the Air Force, I was trained to lead from the front, and I'm suggesting the same concept to you. I'm asking the Oregon State Legislature to demonstrate its commitment to Oregon's veterans by taking concrete steps that directly help them through the efforts of state government. I would like to close by repeating the motto of the Australian Veterans Service: honor the dead, but fight like hell for the living. That's what I'm asking you to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, first of all, thank you very much for serving for Oregon's veterans. We really appreciate it.
And could you identify yourself for the record?
My name is George Kutchus. I'm a veteran from Salem, Oregon, and served in both the U.S. Army, and after getting injured in the U.S. Army, I returned to Oregon and served the National Guard in lieu of receiving disability compensation because there was lots of young folks to be trained to go to Desert Storm back then. Didn't send many, but I was glad to train them. And these days, I'm pretty much just on my own helping vets where I can because we're a networking bunch. Yes, as a matter of fact, all vets know each other. Representative Boquist knows that. And so as a short statement, I would like to say I'm very glad of the work the committee's been doing. Right now, receiving our young veterans back is a major issue to everybody. And with all the effort that has been made over the last few years, there's a few minor issues that would really help greatly. One of them was addressed by Mr. Hesseldahl, which is the opening hours of service. We're all committed to helping veterans. We're all committed to helping those young kids. But if we recall our younger days, I mean, we're all young still, but if we recall our younger days, finding a first job after college, after school, or after leaving the service, we realized that most of the jobs we had were anything from cannery to car repair, you name it. These young folks come back from the service. They have, if lucky, a few days of leave saved up, then go back to the work world, and there's one problem. That's 8 to 5 with a very short lunch break, a painfully short lunch break. What happens is we have state agencies that only service individuals from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, which is great if you're a veteran like myself who doesn't have any place pressing to be in daytime, but it's terrible for these young folks who are trying to get service. They can't go to one single agency and say, hey, I need to be taken care of. They have to go to the Department of Veterans Affairs, to the Department of Employment, then they have to possibly bounce over to Human Services if they need social services or assistance. This could be very easily done. The Oregon Veterans Building is currently renting half of its space out to other agencies, and it would be very easy to just transition workers from other veterans-serving agencies into that building. It would be the one stop you can make, and then extend the hours a bit, maybe one day a week and a Saturday. This wouldn't have to be an ongoing basis, but we should definitely provide the opportunity for them to let us help them. We can want to help them all we want, but we're just not getting there. The second part is a little bit tougher. The second topic I have is concerning our willingness to help veterans. We're all very dedicated, and through these efforts here, we're also trying to educate the public that veteran services are necessary, that fair measures to reemploy veterans and reintegrate veterans are important, and that requires a certain amount of buy-in. We've all been to state training at one point or another and learned the term buy-in. Right now, it looks like the public, as in the individuals and private industries, that have more buy-in than state agencies. Many state agencies still harbor very strange feelings toward veterans. One example is a veteran attended a friend's trip to Boley, for example, and one of the Boley employees, who's a civil rights person, stepped out into the public lobby and was mocking a letter received by a veteran. And I will quote just a couple little portions of this, which was very disturbing to hear. I can understand why the gentleman brought it to my attention.
The gentleman stepped up and said, it's another one of those expletive-emitted vets. They're all expletive-emitted, crazy and stupid. Yeah, yeah, come crying to me, etc. Then he asserted that the letter writer was a Vietnam-era veteran, at which point he uttered, this is par for the course. They're all expletive-deleted, stupid and crazy. Anyone volunteering for the Army is a dumb expletive-deleted. He did this in front of not only his co-workers, but also a group of veterans. That is not a good culture to foster. We have other examples where employee A in an agency will say, would you please talk to this crazy vet? I'm not good dealing with them. That gives a veteran the feeling like we are some sort of lepers. It's not that veterans want any special treatment. We want equal treatment. We just want to be part of the family again, of all the happy Oregonians. Even one of the agencies of the state of Oregon, when investigating one of their employees, one of the reasons the director of the agency gave, while the veteran should be considered dangerous and hostile, was, and I have to get this directly from the copy of the police report, mostly associated with veterans in many capacities, as if associating with veterans was a criminal offense. This sort of culture needs to change. Only then can we get everybody to understand how important it is to welcome all veterans back. And I would like to close, because years and years of extremely spendy college that Uncle Sam paid for, the only benefit you get these wonderful college courses, with a short quote by Rudyard Kipling, and it's, for it's Tommy this and Tommy that, and chuck him out, the brute. But it's savior of his country when the guns begin to shoot. And it's Tommy this and Tommy that and everything you please. But Tommy ain't no bloomin' fool. You bet that Tommy sees.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And
thank
I'd like
you.
To express one more thing to Representative Boquist. This is going to be crazy. I was asked to tell you from the guys at H116 at Kirkuk, Iraq, from 3 years ago, I ran into a group of them finally home on training status. And they said, tell them a vigorous hooah for helping with the ammo situation. Thank you, sir.
I'll go to jail for that one.
I always wondered where you were going.
You don't want to know that story.
Thank you again. Anything further?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to get a little bit more information offline from them on these agencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. No further business. The Veterans Affairs, the House Committee on Veterans Affairs is adjourned.